Hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of Tech Talk Radio. Today, I'm joined by Elizabeth Kohlbach, co-founder and chief executive of Squire, which is a property investment tool investors can use to identify acquisitions, manage and net PRS homes. Elizabeth, hello. How are you?
Hi, Lucy. I'm good. Thank you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you. I'm good. I'm currently talking to you from underneath my duvet, which is essentially kind of my makeshift podcast studio to make sure that no sound is happening. So I think this is a first for me, actually. So, but how are you? How's it been for you over this really weird time? Are you working from home still, or?
I am. Well, no, we are at Squire. We still are all working from home. We've been fairly distributed and open to work from home pre-pandemic, and even more so now. I can definitely sympathise with the duvet impromptu recording studio, because I'm currently speaking to you wearing a Colour Run circa 2002 t-shirt in my old childhood bedroom at my parents' place. So yes, it's been a bit makeshift, but
good
so far.
Well, it's you can't be working from home unless you haven't got jogging bottoms or, you know, some kind of like oversized t-shirt on. So, you know, it's
just, absolutely,
it's the way we roll. Yeah. Well, it's lovely to have you on for podcast. Really, really great to have a chat with you. So I thought first off, what would be great is if you can tell us a little bit more about Squire and what the business does.
Yeah, absolutely. So Squire is a tech-first property investment company. As you said, we're very, very tech and data-oriented, and we use the power of big data and the scalability that tech tools can provide to really go out there and pick up the right existing property stock, so the right properties that are out there, give them a sort of slight cosmetic uplift that is in touch with what tenants in that locality are looking for, and then put them on the rental market. So we believe that by using data, we can find high yield properties that are appealing to institutional investors, going into a more pepper potted portfolio that really diversifies risk, and at the same time provide just a beautiful rental product for tenants, which, you know, coming from Austria and Germany, where renting is a lot more central and not regarded as an inferior kind of tenure in a way, It's something that I feel quite passionately about. The rental market doesn't have to be Magnolia with someone's old brown leather sofa and oak furniture land circa 2008 furniture. So, yeah, we're really about using the power of tech to get institutional investors into a really attractive yielding sector. And that institutional capital allows us to provide really great homes.
Cool. Okay. Well, what was that turning point moment then when you decided to set up Squire?
It was really a combination of two things. So I came to London to do my MBA here. And as I said, coming from Austria and Germany, you have really nice rentals. You have rentals that people live in sometimes for generations. And you can make them your home, you can treat them, and people also do treat them and invest in them as if they are their homes. I always imagined myself coming to London and, you know, being in a cobbled mews in Notting Hill with my glass of wine and the rooftop views, and the reality was the reality
don't
was sandwiched.
We all, don't
I
we
know
all.
It's awful. I ended up with the smell of the fish and chip shop next door coming in every time I opened the window, and I thought, you know, this can't be what it has to be. There must be a market for better rentals. And I was quite passionate about setting that up. But then, of course, the question is, how do you do that? Well, you can only do that if you get access to a large amount of capital and if you create a scalable product here. There's no point creating two or three nice rentals. You need to do this. You need to go in and really change the market. Now, in order to do that, you need to have a way to attack the problem in a scalable fashion, which is exactly what I'd done in my previous job. So we've been using, that was a fashion search engine in Germany. I led the kind of branch out into homewares and furnitures as well. And what we did was use data to really understand what customers are looking for, what kind of trends in furniture and fashion are coming up, which ones are going away. And that allowed us, that AI that allowed us to read from the tons and tons of data and noise, to really read the trends out of that, understand the patterns out of that. That same approach, I thought, should be easy to apply to the real estate market that generates so much data with every transaction, every tenancy. So that similar concepts should apply, and you should be able to understand, where are you going to get high capital appreciation? Where are you going to find a high yield? What's the average time on market in a particular region? So all of these signals and all of this information, if you just throw data at it, you'll be able to really pinpoint the high yields.
I think you've just outlined like a really interesting journey into the industry, because you first, correct me if you're wrong, but I think you first, did you, looking at your LinkedIn here, you went into real estate first and you oversaw acquisitions for Dushall and then went into fashion, like you said, and then, you know, you've obviously gone back into real estate again on the PropTech side, co-founding Squire. It's a really interesting journey. I mean, could you tell me about the lessons you've learned from, you know, going from real estate to fashion back into real estate again, and what lessons you've learned from dipping into a different sector and how it's helped you navigate through property?
Yeah, sure. To add complexity, my degree is actually in law, Austrian law, which is less than helpful at the moment. But you know, the interesting thing is, even so, I always found that there's way more transferable skills out of each of these. It's not just the soft skills, you know, how to manage a team, how to communicate with stakeholders, but also the very specific solutions you approach in certain in sectors that you think are quite industry specific, quite maybe problem specific. Lots of them are just manifestations of an underlying kind of mental model, if you want, that you can pull into the next job. So the simplest one would be the 80-20, you know, the same kind of, you know, the whole 20% of work produces 80% of output. So that whole concept is one that transcends sectors, if you want. But for me personally, one I found was that when I joined that fashion search engine, we were faced with an enormous amount of data that had to be manually annotated and labeled. And we came in, or rather I came in to lead that kind of group of interns that were doing the labeling. And there is a point to be made for hiring more interns, for giving them slightly better tools and all that incremental improvement. But working together with a few of the techies in the company, we quickly came up with a point of, rather than throwing more manual labor at the problem, what we should do is, there's description text in here. Now you can get very simple off-the-shelf algorithms that read the description text of every single item that needs annotating, and then just assign that label for someone else to quality check later on. And then out of that came the question, how do you design that quality check interface for maximum throughput and minimum error? And while that is, on the one hand, something very specific and very fashion focused, you know, how do you create the right category trees, etc., this whole approach of, if you add tech, you then need to design certain interfaces for it, you need to make sure that you sit with the users, you watch how they interact, and you watch and you notice where the pain points are, that whole thing was completely transferable. So I think it's often, actually at LBS, where I did my course, my MBA, we had a really interesting class that was called Discovering Entrepreneurial Opportunities. And one of the exercises we did was, we were all given a problem to solve. I think it was, how can you keep students from using Facebook in classes all the time? And then we were told to look at the problem through a different lens. So one was given Disney, one was given Bill Gates, one was given Facebook themselves. And the idea was that by thinking like Bill Gates, you have a tendency to throw money at the problem. By thinking like Facebook, you have a tendency to put social pressure onto a problem. So this switching lenses point is something I found very powerful.
That's really interesting. I'm gonna throw this out as well. I mean, what can property learn from fashion then, you know, having spent all of that time kind of really delving deep into data of the fashion industry?
I think the fashion industry is very, very much aware to consumer demand and values consumer demand, tracks consumer demand, and understands it a lot better. So the data collection you have available on consumer side, what people search for, how quickly certain trends, let's say, come into play and then fade away again, that is tracked. That information is out there for companies to use. With property, there's a lot of supply data. There's information on sales data of properties. There's a lot of information that is really building specific and area specific, but very little tenant side data. Very few people so far that I'm aware of have collected information other than agents about what tenants are looking for. So typically when you look into an area and you say, well, all of these are small Victorian freehold houses that are done up to a fairly minimal and basic standard, so that it must be what the market demands. But no one's actually given the market that another option to choose from. So I think the tenant side data collection is far more advanced in fashion than it is in property.
Cool. Okay, that's great. And can you share some insights into kind of the investment trends happening at the moment that you've noticed? And to what extent have these been impacted by the ongoing pandemic?
Yeah, investment trends, that's an interesting one. I think it's you so often get the headlines that, you know, prices have fallen in London and investors are rushing in, et cetera, et cetera. And I think what's interesting about the UK property market, especially in terms of, especially for investors, is that I don't think it's not one market. This is not one market. So international investors coming in and looking for prestige investments in prime central London, I haven't followed that market. It's not the market that we look at for Squire. So I'm not sure what's happened there during the pandemic. The kinds of properties that we tend to look at are the ones where we compete sometimes with first-time buyers. So what I can tell you from that market is the stamp duty cut, weirdly, has incentivized first-time buyers to move quicker than they would have otherwise. Right. I think there might be a slight overheating going on in the market because of it right now. So I don't think the quality of asset that's being snapped up by people left, right, and center is subject to scrutiny to a level that it was maybe 6 months ago. Right. What's interesting about that, I think, is that the stamp duty cut actually really profits investors competing with first-time buyers, because they previously were subject to 5% plus 3% stamp duty land tax below 500K. And now those 5% are gone. So it's almost a leveling of the field. So I do think that we're going to see more investment appetite into standing stock. But as before at Squire, we haven't really seen anyone but us who goes into this particular bracket of the market.
Right. Okay. And you talk about the market heating up at the minute with the stamp duty holiday. I mean, long term, do you think that will continue, or do you think that could fizzle out, or what do you predict kind of long term?
I think the UK resi market just has very, very sound fundamentals. The very simple demand supply, if you look at demand and supply, it tells you that it has solid fundamentals. The revenue stream you get is pretty much inflation linked. It's especially in the current low yield environment. There is no safer asset almost, if you want, than rental property. So I don't think that it's going to fizzle out. If anything, the market is obviously easily spooked, and rightfully so. So I think we're going to see ups and downs, and maybe there's going to be a second lockdown, including a complete freeze of the housing market. But in the end, there are fewer homes than there are people to rent them. So there's a certain well, there's just an element of a solid investment in risky times that I think investors are very clear on.
You know, have you got any kind of data insights in terms of which regions, you know, investment is really hotting up in at the moment? Or it would be good to hear a little bit about that.
Yes, of course. I mean, what we've seen is a shift in the type of property that's being looked at. So I guess historically, markets have always been defined as certain regions, and then maybe there's prime and prime fringe. You have it's all very locality based. But at Squire, we think that's only part of the puzzle. So we look at assets slightly more holistically. So we look at a property and say, well, in this particular area, say Leeds is one of the cities we're looking at. In this particular area, if this property has a garden, it plays in a completely different market than the same, say, two-bed flat without a garden. So you really split the market into much, much smaller groups. And speaking in overarching kind of terms of geography, what we've seen is, of course, the Northwest profits from plans to, say, close the gap to London and the lower prices. Around London and the South, what we've seen is simply that it's no surprise, properties with outside space and we're in localities with a more village-like feel, a more desirable local feel, sentiment seems to have switched to prefer that kind of slightly more suburban setting to a better connected but maybe less pleasant immediate neighbourhood.
Personally, how has it been for you navigating the business through the pandemic? You know, what have your greatest challenges been during this time?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny. For us, I think the biggest challenge is really in team happiness and making sure that we had newcomers join during lockdown. So making sure that our newcomers get the full support, get the full Squire experience and the full buy-in into the company and the proper training that they need. I think that's been a real challenge for us. And obviously with Zoom and all the other tools, we've been able to make it work. But I do think, especially for those of our team, you know, who have kids who maybe live in flat shares where that are less suitable to home working and a bit more distracting and maybe a bit more stressful, I think that's been quite a challenge. In terms of the market themselves, obviously there's the lockdown was a bit of a standstill, but we were able to really use that time to work on our internal processes, refine them, fix niggling issues we should have fixed 6 months ago, like every other startup. What's been interesting to see is we have a portfolio of Airbnb properties. Well, they used to be Airbnb properties. Then with the lockdown, obviously the tourism industry was immediately hit. And what was quite gratifying to see was because we're very tech driven, we had all the video walkthroughs, all of the full information pack for each of these properties we already had ready. So when we took the decision to switch them onto regular rental for the next year or so to get through this pandemic period, I could really see how we were ahead of other agents that maybe at the beginning struggled a bit letting properties just from the photos without any videos, without any, say, 3D dollhouses and with no viewings allowed. So seeing how this adoption of tech, you know, suddenly people were comfortable renting something they've only seen on a video, which wasn't the case before. So that was an unexpected positive, I guess, out of the pandemic.
I just want to move on. We know that there are much less female founders in prop tech generally as well than there are male. And I'd like to just kind of get a bit of insight from you as to, you know, why do you think this is, and, you know, how can we address this?
Yeah, that's a good point. In prop tech specifically, you're almost in the little shaded area of the Venn diagram where the two circles of tech and property overlap, and you have, especially when you look at property as being something that's often very either operationally driven all very financially driven, each of which, again, are quite male-dominated professions. So you're really at the epicenter of a very male-dominated industry. I think in terms of property, to me, when I was in high school and when I chose my subject at university, property was always an either or. It was you're either going to be an estate agent or you're going to be a financial investor in property with Excel sheets. So to me, it was always you either show houses or you model things on Excel. And both didn't seem overly appealing, which is ironic given that I now look at houses all the time and I'm in front of Excel all the time. But I think there's not a lot of visibility of prop tech in education. So if there's no pool growing, that's kind of growing up, being interested in the subject, being interested in how, especially how tech can be applied to different industries, to industries that might be a bit more old fashioned and a bit behind other industries. If there's just not, you know, if there's not the interest, if that's not something that's being taught at schools or there are no relevant courses at uni, then I guess there's just not the group of people, the talent pool to pull from. Personally, I've never really experienced any prejudice. Well, at least I haven't noticed any prejudice, any, can you make the coffee because you're the blonde female in the room? So it's, to me, it seems like it's something that needs to be promoted more as a potential career option.
Finally, Ben, what are your future plans for Squire? You know, how are you going to grow and take the business on into, you know, the next year and into the future?
Yeah, of course. So it's really about creating better homes for rentals that produce high yields for institutional investors. So we're really looking over we're currently in conversations with institutional capital to provide between 500 and 600 new Squire rental homes that almost create a bit of an Amazon flywheel, like a virtuous cycle here, where with all those new tenants, we feed our algorithms, our data, to create even better pinpointed algorithms. And in a couple of years' time, we're going to move from looking for high yield properties onwards to looking for properties with the best recession-proof profile, properties with the best high potential for capital appreciation. So there's a lot of things out there we can tackle by using that combination of data to select the right properties and tech to scale the execution on that of that investment hypothesis. So that's really what I'm quite excited about over the next years.
Lovely. Well, Elizabeth, thank you so much for joining me. It's been an absolute pleasure to have a chat with you. And thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me, Lucy. This was really fun. Thank you.